This is a Double J podcast. For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to the J Files Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Hey, it's Kaz Tran here. Welcome to The J-Files, the podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band, we look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. We also give you access to the Double J and Triple J archives, packed full of iconic interviews. On this episode, it's Regurgitator, a band who pushed boundaries and buttons across their decades-long career, striking a unique balance between joy, humour and outrageously explicit content.
We like to do a wide variety of things, and we don't like to keep the doors closed on any sort of front or genre, if you know what I mean.
I think we're just a bunch of geeks who are trying to make each other laugh at dumb gags, that's all.
We just make music that's fun, and just pop music is fun music.
Regurgitator were an important part of Australia's alternative music explosion in the 90s. Blokey pub rock was on the way out, and new bands like Spiderbait, Jebediah, Magic Dirt and UMI were popping up across the country. Regurgitator rose out of Brisbane's underground music scene alongside bands like Powderfinger and Custard. Here's Quan Yeomans and Ben Eli talking to Rosie Beaton about how Regurgitator got started back in 1994.
Well, we were all playing in kind of incredibly technical metal bands in the early 90s in Brisbane, and Brisbane was a burgeoning city with lots of very easy connections between musicians and artists, and the Dole was very easy to be on, and the Music Fund, Musicians Fund, I should say, for the 90s. And we were kind of crossing paths here and there, seeing each other at gigs and being impressed by each other's tattoos and bass playing skills and drumming skills. And we just kind of were living in similar areas, and I met Ben at a party, and we had a terrible drunk stoned jam, funk jam, that was probably god awful.
And then we went in, and we got naked straight away and had a sweat lodge. Went into a sweat lodge.
Jumped into a freezing lake.
And then we were wandering through the forest.
I started licking trees.
So it's a good way to get to know each other, really, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been pretty strong friends ever since.
That's right.
So from that, you know, you started writing songs about Blub Boy, and you probably, you know, found some sort of a... There was so much about both of you that was quite similar.
Yeah, well, we're kind of really different people.
Yeah, I think that's the energy of the initial Regurgitator, including Martin Lee, was that we were such eclectically different individuals. I remember meeting Martin and just being like, well, he's an Asian dude, but he's not like one of those bookish Asian dudes that does what his parents tell him to do and, you know, studies really hard.
Yeah, he's a wild boy.
And his body was like covered in these tattoos that looked like something ripped out of some sort of demonic novel or, you know, Bible or whatever.
He's great. I think it kind of started as a side project, and it didn't start to be... there was no preconceived ideas about it being anything. So we just kind of wanted to do something that was a little bit more simpler stylistically and a little bit more fun. And it just kind of worked. I don't know why.
So 1994, your Regurgitator EP comes out, No One Is Hamburger, then 95 New came out, so you're pretty much backing up the tunes, and then obviously after making two EPs, you rose to national prominence, thanks of course to your 96 release, Two Planes.
And that was a funny story because there's actually mention of us in Alan Jones' biography, because Alan Jones and a bunch of religious Christian groups tried to get our music banned from Kmart and department stores because they weren't happy with our lyrical content. And because of that, you know,
it really pushed record sales through the roof. Thank you very much for that, Alan.
Yeah, and teenagers, if you try and tell a teenager not to buy something, they just want to find it. Yeah. So thanks, Alan.
Yeah.
Thanks, the religious right wing, for helping, you know, get us off the dole.
Yes, after the release of that debut album, Two Playing, tens of thousands of young music fans went out and bought the record, pushing it up to number 3 on the Australian music charts. One of the songs Alan Jones and co were so outraged over was the now classic track, I Sucked a Lot of Cock to Get Where I Am.
I sucked a lot of cock to get where I am.
That song and Kung Fu Sing both landed in the 1996 Triple J Hottest 100, and Two Playing earned the band 2 ARIA Awards for Best Alternative Album and Breakthrough Album. Regurgitator had debuted in a big way. Their sound was fun, rude, and a genre-hopping mix of rock, rap, funk, and pop. A year later, they released their second album, Units, and it was even more successful than the first. Units saw the band go in a completely different musical direction. In this great chat from 1997, Ben and Kwan talked to Richard Kingsmill about the ambitious change in style.
I think it's really important for this band to just make it clear to people that we like to do a wide variety of things, and we don't like to keep the doors closed on any sort of front or genre, if you know what I mean.
Mm. Was some of the reaction for this album coming from the reactions that you got for the first album and also from the fans that you picked up along the way? Were you feeling like they were putting you in a box and you were keen to show them that there was no box for Regurgitator?
Yeah, that's right. No. No, not really. I mean, we just make music that's fun, and this was a really fun album. And just pop music is fun music. There wasn't any real pressure from anyone to do anything in particular for the next album. Just pressure from our own sort of personalities and our own kind of desires to do as many different types of musics and things that we enjoy doing.
On the exclamation mark, track 3, which is also subtitled the song formerly known as, which Prince album do you reckon this could have appeared on?
Oh, I don't know. I was listening to Controversy and going, damn, I wish he'd done more of that sort of stuff. I guess that kind of era previous to Purple Rain.
It could even slip onto Purple Rain. I thought pre-Purple Rain when I first heard it.
It's a little too, possibly a little too funky for Purple Rain. Purple Rain was his pop album, I guess.
Yeah, the funk had sort of diminished a little bit by Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Why do something that is so overtly Prince?
Oh, just because it's so out at the moment. Everyone hates it. I really dig it, and I like that sort of that heavy funk. And Prince is just such a bad person to imitate, I think. Not many people would really do that, so I thought I'd give it a go.
I think it's the fact that you pitch change your voice that made it sound like Prince the most. Because that's not Kwan's real voice, it's like Kwan's voice going through a lexicon harmonizer, which makes his voice sound higher than it actually is.
So. We actually sped the tape up, I think, for that.
Oh, you sped the tape up?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, so the whole music is a bit faster as well, is it?
No, we actually recorded it slower. Yeah, recorded the voice slower and then sped up the tape with the music.
So how do you actually sing slower?
Oh, you have to pitch down. You actually have to find the pitch lower and then sing it slower and then turn the tape speed back up to normal speed, and then you'll have a higher pitched vocal.
How hard is that to do, Kwan?
It's really hard to do like vocal harmonies and stuff, because you've listened back to it at normal speed, and then you've got to go back into the room and get it right, and so he turns down the tape again, then you've got to hear it again and then try and get back to that same tone. And I'm a terrible singer as it is, and it was extremely difficult at the time.
Did you feel, yeah, it must feel like you're singing like someone else.
Yeah, kind of. Well, it does. The end effect does. It makes you sound like someone completely different.
Yeah, but also just trying to pitch down and sing unnaturally, it sounds like.
Oh, well, my voice is generally lower anyway, so it's easier for me to pitch down rather than go up.
Yeah.
Which is why I did it, because I can't sing falsetto that high. So it's easier for me to sing lower, so that's what we did.
Given that you've used something like that on that track, obviously you can't do it on stage now, can you?
Well, yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
I sing the high bits.
Oh, so you step into the...
He does all the falsetto parts, like a falsetto part over the whole song, and I just do the low, sexy bits.
I see. Okay, so that's how it works on stage.
It actually works quite well, that song, surprisingly enough.
Do you think you're going to lose any fans with this album?
Oh, sure.
Do you think you're going to lose many fans with this album?
Oh, sure. I think that's inevitable.
I was kind of like, it was kind of nice doing these couple of gigs though when we played like Darwin, Cairns, Townsville and Perth, because people seem to enjoy the new songs as well, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, they seem to be very receptive.
I had a lot of fear thinking everyone's just going to, I thought, oh my God, everyone's going to hate our new electro pop. We played it and, you know, all these guys that have long hair and muscles and no shirt on, they liked it. And I just thought that was awesome.
Yeah. In some ways, are you underestimating the acceptance value of the average punter out there in Australia?
I think you've got to. Otherwise, if you overestimate, it's worse because you're preparing for a fall. It's always good to prepare for a fall, especially in this business, I think.
So you can be pleasantly surprised at the end of the.
That's right. End of it. Always expect the worst. That's my motto. Anyway.
Do you think
that's
the like, kids? Sorry, Ben. Go on.
That's just like the same with the gig too. If we try and have really bad sound checks, so we feel good about playing.
That's right. It's very up and down with us. So, yeah.
Well, I won't say this. Well, I will say this because this is going to make you maybe feel a little worse. Just because it'll set you up maybe for a fall somewhere down the track. but the word so far, and
Don't set me up.
Sorry, I got a couple of phone calls, and I've heard everything in the last couple of weeks as well from various people. They've asked me, "Have you heard the new Regurgitator album yet?" Because they haven't heard it. Have you heard it? I said, "Yeah." Is it the classic everyone's saying it is?
Is it the OK Computer of Australia? What do I tell him is,
I say, yes, it's good. Yes, it's good. I mean, you can't judge a classic after three listens. All I can say is that, yes, no, it is a good album. I mean, obviously record companies do talk up things these days.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but there was certainly a vibe, and there still is a vibe going around, that this is going to be a big album for you guys.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that'd be really good for us, I think. It's good to have a good album out, and it's good to have people listening to your album. And it'd be great if we could sustain an audience of a similar type or a similar size as the first one did. That would be all I'd ask for, you know. Be really happy with that.
So it doesn't make you feel overly nervous to hear comments like that floating around already?
It makes me happy. I mean, I'm quite happy to hear that sort of thing. But you also have to prepare for the other side of it, as you said.
Do you think you guys still are as subversive as ever?
Subversive? This is the new sound of subversion. Pop. No, I don't know. What is subversive? We're not subversive at all. What are you talking about? We've never been subversive.
Well, the world of Sleaze is pretty subversive.
Is it?
The title of the album, Unit, is subversive.
Is it?
Yes, of course.
Well, I guess it doesn't take much these days. I don't know. That's all I'm saying.
You just dress it up to make it not look subversive.
Oh, right. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Subversion is something that's becoming incredibly hard to spot as far as I'm concerned. I don't really know what subversion is anymore, because it seems to me that
well, if a band like Offspring can go around saying that they're a punk rock band, then what is what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, compared to Offspring, I guess we're slightly subversive, but everyone is slightly subversive compared to Offspring, I think. But yeah, I don't know. I don't consider myself particularly subversive. I live in the suburbs. I don't do anything illegal. There's nothing subversive there.
Mm. But you can still sort of talk about how screwed up the world is and how, you know, stuffed the whole... Well, I mean, the title...
Yeah, but that's been going on for... People have been doing that for 50, 60 years now, and with rock music, you know, it's not particularly different or hardcore or anything.
Mm. Ben, do you see Regurgitator at all as being a subversive band, or is there any intent there, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think we're just a bunch of geeks who are trying to make each other laugh at dumb gags, that's all. I don't think we're very subversive.
I guess you could say we're subversive in relation to the our popularity, I guess that is surprising to me that we can get away with certain things that a lot of other bands may not seem to touch. But in the big scope of things, in the worldly scope of things, I don't think we're particularly subversive at all.
Yeah, but you still do test the boundaries. I sucked a lot of cock to get where I am. Not a track which 10 years ago would have got much radio airplay anywhere in the world.
Well, yeah, but these days it's really quite passe, really. I mean, it does get on the radio and people do get it and people forget it in the next couple of weeks.
But you're the type of band that is making it passe.
Well, okay. I'll accept that. But, I mean, there's plenty of other bands that have sworn in on records and made comments about genitalia and toilet sort of humour and stuff like that. They prefer to use punk rock music as their genre and medium, whereas we use pop music, so it's sort of easier and more palatable for people to listen to, I guess.
And hence you're twice as subversive as they were.
Well, if you want to say that, then that makes sense, okay? I know what you mean, but it doesn't feel like we're being particularly subversive. Every day I shit to the sea.
It's strange, but it doesn't mean much to me. Units was a huge album. It won 5 ARIA Music Awards, including Album of the Year, and the song, formerly known as, was voted in at number 6 in the Hottest 100. It was a bold move to change things up so early in their career, but it definitely paid off. And that boldness was something the band stuck with throughout their career. In 2004, Regurgitator teamed up with Channel V for an ambitious project called Band in a Bubble. They lived in a glass cube in Melbourne's Federation Square for 3 weeks to write and record a whole album. Punters could walk past the bubble and watch the band work, and the entire experiment was broadcast on TV 24 hours a day. The result was Regurgitator's 5th album, Mishmash. I got a great new friend, he's a robot. He's my man and he's megawatt. He doesn't pretend, never lies, never cheats, never steals from me. Here's Ben and Kwan talking to Robbie Buck in 2004 about the weird experience.
Yeah, well, I have this tension in my solar plexus, this kind of muscular knot, and I got it in the bubble, and it's slowly going away, but it's still kind of there, so it's kind of physical. I'm carrying it, or still carrying it around physically in my body. So, I can still feel
what was that
the
caused?
Bubble.
What was it caused by?
I don't know, just tension. I think people just staring at me, and that rabbit in the headlights kind of sensation for 3 weeks, and it's kind of like being on stage, you know, it's like doing a live gig for 3 weeks nonstop.
Was it uncomfortable for you?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it, I mean, this is a fairly obvious question, but did it affect your work very much, being in there?
I think it probably made us work a little quicker than we normally would. Busted through the songs a bit quicker, I thought. And,
Definitely affected methodology. I think it controlled the methodology more than we expected it to.
And how did that affect the outcome?
It just got done, like you said, a lot quicker.
What about musically, though?
Musically, I don't know if it had that much effect, to be honest. I mean, we went in there with pretty, like, built-up songs, songs that we were reasonably confident with, songs that were pretty well-developed. They did mutate a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think having guests, like people, some people help shape songs too. I mean, there was this guy who was playing this metal UFO just in the street doing a street performance, and he was playing it, and broadcast through the PA outside the bubble was I was sent by God to get you off, and while we were recording it, and he was playing along to it, and found a melody that fitted it, and he came up and said, "Oh, listen, I've got this little riff that could fit in the song. Can we try it?" And yeah, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night or something, and we plugged in a mic and got his take, and just worked out really well and things like that.
And it ends up on the album?
Yeah, well, there's a sound that you can hear when the song starts. There's this kind of gongy kind of sound, and that's him.
And you hear all the, traffic in the background and sirens and stuff passing.
Yeah, so there's kind of sonic things like that, and that made it really special. And there's, like, almost every track's got a guest performer in some way, you know. Yeah. And so all those, there's quite a lot of instances. I could probably explain them all, but it'd take ages. But there's quite a lot of circumstances like that that made it really cool and quite exciting, you know. Cause we've never had session players before, ever, really. So, yeah, it was just being so open to the public and open to anything that can happen
was really cool.
So what was the highest point and the lowest point for you?
I really enjoyed just having stare-out competitions with people that I didn't know at all.
Like through the glass?
Yeah, through the glass, and just having those kind of intimate just responses and interactions with people, complete strangers. The low point was probably, you know, being woken up for the third night in a row at 4 o'clock in the morning by some drunk guy banging on the glass. That kind of affected me in a negative way, and I wasn't really feeling very good about that.
Just being violated like that?
Yeah, I was expecting it, but it was just tiring. And in a tired mode, I kind of, I that was probably the closest to losing it that I got, just lying there in my bunk.
So were there times where you thought, just get me out of here, like I don't care?
Only those times, I think, but only for momentary kind of lapse. The rest of the time,
it's a pretty helpless kind of feeling, just because, you know, you're half asleep and you're pretty defenseless as well. You know, there's people roaming around, you know, drunk. But the first week was the worst because the security wasn't very good. They were like museum security or something. There was like one of them. And on a Friday or Saturday night, it was just a nightmare in the first week until we got proper rock and roll security.
So just describe, for people who didn't ever see it, just describe the size and scope and what it actually looked like.
Yeah, well, it's a 10 by 10 meter glass box that was kind of, it was about a meter off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And people could...
It was three-sided glass, though. There was a solid wall in the back, which was the main entrance door, and there was a compound area at the back, which was mostly filled with a shower slash toilet facility and huge air conditioning ducts, and there was a tiny space for us to kind of work out and sharpen our shanks.
Yeah, it was a really small space, like, and you know, some people go down and smoke cigarettes or just, you know, talk. It's where you could kind of vent or, you know, swear or talk about other people. So I couldn't really talk. We had a meeting with a lawyer before we went in. We weren't allowed to talk about people or religions or swear profusely and use certain words. And
so there was a lot of limitations on you?
A little bit. It just, yeah, you kind of had to censor yourself a little.
Was that, I would imagine, a difficult thing when you're trying to express yourself, being limited like that?
Yeah, we forgot a lot of times too, you know. So it's just,
I mean, Jenna must have said the word about 50 or 60 times out into a public space. So, I mean, that was a first for him.
Yeah. Yeah, just being mic'd up was quite strange.
Yeah, I mean, we had lapel mics on the whole time, so you could kind of boom over people. You had these one-sided conversations, which is good because you were kind of really defenseless and really vulnerable because of the glass. People were, like, watching you sleep, but they couldn't actually have a serious go at you because you couldn't hear them and they could hear you. So you had this kind of power play thing that was in your favour, which was good.
Probably without that, you would have gone...
I'd say so.
Yeah.
It would have been pretty
bad. That's the only weapon.
That.
Yeah. Looking back on this as an album, though, what is, you know, the essence of Mishmash?
I don't know. I think it's kind of like for want of a better term, I think it's a bit of a party record. You know, it's kind of is. It's a, I think there's
such a cliche.
The essence of that record. Looks, you know, the songs. If you look at the songs that we left off, like we left off other ones. One was a bit like Blue Oyster Cult, and the other one was kind of, I don't know, maybe some more ballady type things, and they just didn't seem kind of up and amped and kind of like, well, let's go out and, you know.
You say that though, but it sounds like a happy album to me, a lot of this. It seems a less angsty album than perhaps some of your last few.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
We're a much happier band. I think that's probably what it is. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, when we did Unit, we were just having heaps of fun and it was really lighthearted and we're just clowning around and pulling dumb sounds and it was just, we're just having fun, basically. And I think the last two probably weren't as fun, but this one definitely felt fun making it.
Regurgitator have kept that sense of fun and joy over the years. In 2018, they released their ninth album, Head Rocks, after a five-year break from recording. It was at a point in the band's career where they'd been writing music for other projects, raising families, and taking a step back from the hectic touring of their younger days. When Ben and Kwan spoke to Zanro in 2018, they talked about how they still get a kick out of making each other laugh with their lyrics.
I think it's always been a fun thing, and I think Kwan, that's why I was always really attracted to Kwan and his lyrical play. When you have like a heavy song and put pretty cute lyrics on it, or a cute pop song and put really dirty sexual lyrics on it, or something. Yes. I think I like that kind of that play, and it's challenged me, and I've always been a fan of his words. My words are a little bit limited.
No, not true. I mean, I was really surprised when I actually listened carefully to that Metal is Big in the Baltic States, and that slash of vein over the inverted cross line just completely went over me before. I never heard it before.
Oh, yeah.
And the way it slots in is really nice. I like your phrasing and stuff. But that is the great thing about music. You have these multi-layers. I mean, it's not as layered as something like creating a film, but it does have these kind of layers and lyrics. Lyrics and the way they match the music and sit with the music are really interesting to me. But everyone, you know, some people just gloss over them and don't give a damn. So you never know whether it's going in or not.
For you guys, it's obviously still surprising each other, you know, more than 20 years after first starting to play together. What's it actually like to grow up with someone in a band?
I think it's nice. I think it's kind of like a family. And
yeah, we're like brothers, but it's now, kind of, aren't we, really?
Yeah, it definitely feels like that. And it feels really nice touring. And the good thing is we don't do it all the time, so we really enjoy each other's company. Because it's kind of a bit of a treat rather than a chore these days, which is great.
And we get to talk about each other's pains that are, you know, after the third week of touring, we're like,
in like the aches and pains.
Oh, my knees.
Not existential pains. No, more like a gammy hip or something.
Yeah, exactly.
We're getting to that
maybe.
Stage.
Maybe a bit of both, yeah.
You're also growing up with your fans. I mean, are you looking out into the crowds of places that you've been to many times before and seeing a lot of familiar faces with every Regurgitator show?
Oh, it's such a trip because I think we went through a phase of our crowd was getting older, and then we hit a phase where a lot of people were getting younger, and then I was talking to some of the people in the audience and realised, I say, how do you know about our band? And they say, well, I've been listening to your band since I was 3, because my mum and dad would play, and now I'm old enough to come to the club and see you play.
I love that.
And now we've got all these kids who come to our shows.
Yeah, that's right.
Who are fans of us through their parents.
I love the stories where they say, I had to hide Unit in my mattress because I wasn't allowed to listen to it and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but then you also get kids that are like, I started listening to you like in that, like on your fifth or sixth record in. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's really weird. Yeah. That's really weird that they would get into it from that period.
What do you think you've learned from each other through making music, growing up, having families, always coming back to Regurgitator and doing this? What have you learned from each other?
Just to calm down, I think. Calming down together. We kind of grew up calming down slowly, doing this really energetic, frenetic thing together and just approaching it in more of a calm kind of manner, I guess. Because at the start it was like argument city, crazy stuff. Like,
yeah, exactly. Really? Coming down and learning how to not freak out and get stressed with each other and just be really calm and, I don't think that song's a Regurgitator song. It's fine, but in the old days we probably would have, fought over it. Definitely.
That's wonderful that you can do that within a relationship, that you can both grow and grow together.
Yeah. I think it's probably afforded, like the distance we have between us probably affords that as well, that we're not in each other's faces all the time. We're not living in the same city. But, the length of period that we spend with each other, you learn a lot about each other's characters and what buttons not to press and how to kind of ease each other through things.
Also, making a record in a bubble would have definitely tested the friendship.
So bizarre.
Regurgitator holds a special place in the hearts of many Australian music fans for their sonic anarchy, funny lyrics and unique approach to music and art. Regurgitator's core strength is their genius pop songwriting and the joyful respite it offers. The J-Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Gab Burke with production support from Phoebe Bennett and Sam Wicks. Theme music is by Art vs. Science, and you can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.